Hi, everyone. My name is Kelly Walters. I am a grad student working with Roberta Lopez at Michigan State. And today I'm going to share a little bit of our research about how light intensity and carbon dioxide affects sweet basil seedling growth in volatiles. So first, a little outline of what we'll be talking about. So why basil and what our research goals are, how we'll achieve these goals, so our materials and methods, how growth and development was impacted, and then finally, a little bit about volatiles. So I didn't finish all of the analysis for the volatiles, so I'll give you a little bit of an introduction and some preliminary results. So why basil? Popularity. So it's a popular fresh culinary herb, and some of you have seen this slide already, but this is a failed research attempt that I was able to make pesto. So there's a bright side to everything, right? Production. So basil is... you're able to grow it in hydroponic systems in controlled environments readily. And then finally, post-harvest. So I found this at the grocery store, our local grocery store. Basil is sensitive to cold, and it also wilts rather quickly. So producing basil locally, where you can get it to the consumer more quickly, where you don't necessarily need to refrigerate it, is beneficial. So one of the goals of this research was to increase volatile content. Chang published a study in 2007 where they had a sensory panel, and 36% of the people surveyed preferred weaker basil, while 64% preferred stronger basil. So we decided last year to conduct a survey of growers, and We asked them how much would research on manipulating growing environment to improve crop flavor benefit your operation. And 52% said very beneficial, while 39% said moderately beneficial. So this, out of all the questions we asked, this was one of the highest research priorities that our growers surveyed identified. We also asked, will your consumers pay more for the crops with increased flavor? Because sometimes, things cost. So if you're increasing light, increasing carbon dioxide, every penny counts. And 84% said yes. But they have the space, and you have to maintain your yield. You go into the grocery store, and you have that clamshell, and you look at it, and it's a certain amount of ounces. So if we're having increased flavor but greatly decreased yield, that might not be economically feasible either. So we're looking at manipulating light intensity and carbon dioxide. So we look at our normal photosynthetic response curve. As we increase our light intensity from zero, we get to the light compensation point. Again, keep increasing our light intensity until we get to a light saturation point. So what happens if we increase the carbon dioxide? Again, it depends what our initial carbon dioxide concentration was, but hopefully we can increase that light saturation point, increase photosynthesis, hopefully increase some of those secondary metabolites, and increase our yield. I mentioned before in the title, we're working with seedlings. So why are we working with seedling production versus finishing? So say we have a 2.5 square centimeter area to grow one seedling. If we transplant that, we have a much larger area that we're growing. So we can produce a lot of seedlings in that same area. So the per plant input cost could be less. So the objectives of this research were to determine how light intensity and carbon dioxide concentration influences sweet basil growth and development, and then volatiles. We wanted to determine if differences at the seedling stage would persist through plant finishing and harvest. So the seedling stage, the plants were grown in a growth chamber. Seeds were sown into rock wool cubes and placed in a growth chamber with an irrigated daily. The nutrient solution had a pH of 6, and the EC was 0.78 to provide 100 milligrams per liter nitrogen. And the average daily temperature, we had two chambers, was 23 degrees. Light was provided by the Fluence ray fixtures. So this is a broad spectrum fixture, as you can see here, we had four different light intensities. So the targets were 100, 200, 400, and 600 micromoles with a photoperiod of 16 hours to create DLIs of 6, 12, 23, and 35 moles. Our actual photoperiods are listed here for the two different chambers. We used quantum sensors to evaluate the light intensity over time, and we also used the spectrophotometer to measure the light intensity on all sides of our flats. For carbon dioxide treatments, our targets were 500 and 1,000. And this was maintained by using compressed carbon dioxide and soda lime to scrub. And these were our actual carbon dioxide concentrations for the experiments. After 2 weeks in the seedling stage, we collected data and then transplanted plants into the greenhouse, into deep flow hydroponic systems, where they were grown for 3 weeks. The average daily temperature was about 22.4 with a DLI of 14 moles. The nutrient solution was adjusted daily to maintain a pH of 6.0 and an EC of 1.56, so providing 200 milligrams per liter nitrogen. This was a split plot design, so we had two growth chambers and four light intensities in each growth chamber, and this was repeated three times over time. So we collected data, again, 2 weeks after sowing. And you can see here we have a pretty big difference in growth, but there was no difference between the carbon dioxide concentrations between 500 and 1,000. So what happened with shoot fresh mass? So shoot fresh mass increased as we increased our light intensity from 100 to 600 micromoles by about 287%. So this is at the seedling stage. You're like, okay, what else happened? Leaf area, as you can tell here, the leaf area of an individual seedling increased by 738% as we increased our light intensity from 100 to 600 micromoles. So again, these plants were finished all in the same environmental conditions. And we did have an increase in fresh mass by 80% as we increased our light intensity from 100 to 600 micromoles. So increasing the seedling, the light intensity that seedlings were produced under did have a significant impact on our finished yield. Also, we had an increase, a 56% increase in branch number at harvesting. So what about volatiles? So there are many different compounds that make up the characteristic flavor of basil. So this was a newer area for me, and I thought it was really interesting what all the different compounds did. So we went and looked at the standards, and we're wafting the standards to kind of, you know, what are these compounds? What do they smell like? So eugenol is one of the main compounds, and it smells like cloves, and it's one of the main compounds in cloves, as well as methyl eugenol. And these are both phenylpropanoids. Methyltravacol, or estradiol, smells like anise, and it is also a phenylpropanoid. 1,8-cineol, or eucalyptol, you can tell by eucalyptol, it smells like eucalyptus. And this is a terpene. And then the fifth and final compound that we looked at was linalool. And it's described as floral with spiciness, but I think it smells like Fruit Loops. And again, this is a terpenoid. So we have two main pathways that we're looking at, the phenylpropanoids and the monoterpenes. But together, anise, cloves, eucalyptus, and Fruit Loops, we have part of the characteristic basil flavor that we're looking for. So I'm going to share a little bit on one compound, eugenol. Again, this is preliminary results. So this is from the seedlings at transplant. You can see here that as we, the light intensity of 600 micromoles, we had a higher concentration of eugenol than at 200 or 400 micromoles. And this analysis was conducted using Headspace with a SPEMI fiber and GCMS. So with that, increasing our carbon dioxide concentration from 500 to 1,000 did not affect growth. But maybe if we had a lower carbon dioxide concentration of, say, 300, we might have had more differences. But between 500 and 1,000, we did not. And increasing the lead intensity to 600 micromoles, though it may seem very high for seedlings, and you may think, okay, we'd burn the seedlings, it was beneficial. We saw an increase in seedling growth, increase in eugenol concentration, and an increased finishing production yield. So with that, I'd like to thank everyone who has helped me at Michigan State and at the USDA, and all of the organizations that have helped fund my research. Thanks. Yeah.
You mentioned something about post-harvest. So if you find the optimum is to increase your CO2 and light, and then they go to the shelf later without having improvements, do you expect
so the question was about post-harvest. So if we have these treatments, you know, and we're harvesting, at harvest we can see what's happening, but what happens on the shelf? And I can't answer those questions. I'm not actually doing any experiments with post-harvest, but I would assume that some of those characteristics would carry on, but it would probably depend on, you know, what compounds and if they, yeah, I don't know for sure. Yeah.
It's interesting that you didn't see increasing yield based on your CO2.
Mm-hmm.
Do you quantify or measure air velocity at the leaf level to see if you were able to, you know, have a thin leaf under layer to allow that CO2 to increase into the canopy? If you have very dense seedling packages, so that can create, you know, a big buffer layer preventing from CO2 influx.
Yeah, so the question was, did we measure the air velocity around the seedlings to see if, you know, the carbon dioxide is actually getting to the plant? So we did not measure that, but that's a really good idea, and maybe we should do some follow-up studies to see. I think we have it. I think we just have an air velocity mirror, so that would be interesting. Good idea, Ricardo. So we chose the question was, why did you choose 500 and 1,000? And we chose 1,000 because we thought it would be high enough, and 500, 400 is, you know, more what is ambient outside. But we chose 500 because we thought that could be a realistic condition in a controlled environment. But yeah, maybe we should have chosen a lower carbon dioxide concentration, or really increased that air velocity. Mm-hmm.
So how did you do that? How did you get different light intensities within one growth chamber?
So the question was, how did we get different light intensities in one growth chamber? So we have large walk-in growth chambers, and we were able to have different sections. So it's, I think, 3x6 sections that we can have, 4 3x6, 3 foot by 6 foot sections in the growth chamber. So I hung black cloth in between the different treatments. Yeah, Bruce?
Start with space plants and then grow your plants.
So the question was about plant community and plant overlaps and how the plants were spaced. So at the seedling stage, we had a flat, and the seedlings were just sown in a flat. And they weren't spaced. It was just one flat. And, well, we had some different experiments in there, so sometimes there were different plants in the chambers, but normally it was just one flat. When they were transplanted into the greenhouse, they were spaced pretty, I think about, I don't know how many, 8 inches apart. So there wasn't very much overlap in the greenhouse. In the study, in the greenhouse, yeah. Yes, space plants.
We're out of time.
Thank you.